I'm Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. I've been a cop for 27 years. I like to say I got a backstage pass to life. Well, guess what? I got some tickets for you. So come on in, pull up a chair, turn up that volume, and let's go. Chasing Justice is on.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and we are on the America Out Loud Radio Network. I'm watching the world spiral out of control. Not so much in, you know, with the pandemic that we've been dealing with for how long? Actually, a year now. But the reality is, we are seeing such a discrepancy between, I don't know how other way to put it, but the old order and the new order. For years, we thought that communism was dead and gone. That the fall of the Soviet Union was proof that on a grand scale, communism really could not last the test of time. Now, the Chinese are a communist country, but they certainly have embraced at least some type of a capitalist hybrid with all of their businesses. Now, the government runs everything. The army controls everything. But there is all of that business and that revenue going on. So it's interesting to watch how the communist government, the communist theology, is so diametrically opposed to capitalism, yet they stepped in and borrowed our system to make theirs even stronger. With the death of the Soviet Union, it seemed clear that the battle that had raged, you know, the Cold War that had raged between the United States and the Soviet Union for how many umpteen amounts of years had finally been settled, that communism could not survive the light of day. When people actually saw what it was, when they saw the lifestyle that people lived under that communist government where everyone was equal, everyone had the same, we realized very basic reality was that you had the same of the worst. You certainly didn't have the same of the best. Now, capitalism, on the other hand, granted, there is poverty. There are poor people in capitalist countries like America. But I heard a discussion the other day that I thought was interesting. It was, while capitalism does not guarantee you success, it offers opportunity to everyone. And the person that was speaking was saying, well, listen, that might be true for some people, but it's less true for others. Other people do not have the same privilege, the same abilities as everyone else, and therefore it's inappropriate and it's not right, and we have to go back and change it. This, I think, is the essence of all of this cancel culture when it comes to American history and our form of government and our rights and capitalism in itself. The whole idea is if you remove the statues because the people that the statues are based on did bad things while they were creating the country, then everything that they created was really bad. So how do you expect people who have not done as well as others to look back on those same events and say, boy, that was great what those guys and girls did back then, because it was fair to everyone and when it wasn't. We all know that the system at the time, with slavery and everything else that was going on, was not fair to lots of people who were here in America. What that thinking, though, forgets to look at is the reality that as America evolved, we were not just America, we were human beings. The human condition was evolving here in America in ways it was not necessarily evolving in the rest of the world. We were coming to realize the horror and the depravity of slavery, and we knew it had to end. So the majority of Americans wanted it to end. There was a war that partly was based on that. You know, the economics that were involved with the Civil War had a lot to do with slavery and the economics of slavery. But we won that war, and slavery was abolished. Now, the reality is that lots of people suffered because of slavery that had been historical. So I understand when people say, sure, the opportunity is here for everyone, but the reality is we cannot always access that opportunity because of the historical things that have happened. This is an argument that can be made. What I have a hard time with is not that argument can be made, because I can see it. I can see what people are saying, and I can understand, you know, we went through the 60s, the 1960s, not too long ago. which was about, you know what, 100 years after the Civil War. And we saw the strife in the country, and we saw the riots in the country, and we saw the frustration in the country. And here we are now, you know, 50, almost 60 years past that time. And we're in upheaval again because change has not come quick enough. But that's where I think all of us have to take a deep breath and figure this out. We can't undo the country. We can't say America was bad and therefore it has to go away, because once it goes away, what will replace it will not be anything like the American ideals. Whether those American ideals were lived out by everyone purposely or inadvertently, if America goes away, if we relinquish the reins to this republic in hopes that we're going to get something better, we only have to look to the strife that we're seeing around the world and the fact that most of these leftist groups are totalitarian-based, strong central government-based, and we know that that's not what's going to happen. We're going to revert back to what humanity has had to deal with forever, was you will get the rise of a certain group, will promise everything to everyone, and then at some point, the money will run out. And the leaders of that group will reap all the benefits and everyone else will suffer. This is what's repeated over and over and over again. So while we can sit down and we can have conversations with people, everyone who feels aggrieved, their grievances are based on a reality that they are experiencing. Just because I'm not experiencing their reality doesn't mean they're not aggrieved. And they don't have something to say, something to complain about, something that should be addressed in our nation. See, I'm trying to take an open view at this. I'm trying to say, because we cannot continue on this current path. You know, we can't have one side demanding everything, burning and going crazy to make change, and another side saying, no, it has to stay the way it is, because if it, then we're going to stop, because that's going to come to a head, and it's going to come to an ugly head. And how do we deal with it? So I'm trying to find a way. How do we cross the divide from both sides to see, take a deep breath, and figure out what can we do here to fix this going forward? Because we cannot lose America. If we lose America and we lose the American ideals, no matter what anyone thinks that they're based on, they are the greatest conglomeration of concepts of human freedom and liberty that have ever taken place on our planet. And if we throw them all out, if we throw the baby out with the bathwater, so to speak, instead of finding a way to recognize the good, purge the bad, and then all of us move forward, we're going to have a very, very difficult time. This is where we don't notice this in America. We don't feel it in America because we've been so isolated by physical oceans away. There's been no major strife on our continent. We haven't had world wars here. The Civil War is the last real battle time we've had in America. And we are not used to that. It seems like this is static like this forever. But I think if we see the changes that are happening around us, slow, step-by-step changes, that our rights are being eviscerated slowly. The idea of free speech, which was paramount to freedom in our republic for the first 200 years, is now looked at as something that is dangerous. Free speech is dangerous depending on who is saying what. And therefore, we must silence certain people. Why all of us don't recognize the danger of that, I don't know. I know words can be hurtful. Words can be painful. Words can really do damage. But censorship of saying certain people can't speak and certain thoughts cannot be spoken, no matter how painful they are, damages every single one of us and removes part of our rights. I have always said that free speech is the hinge pin of freedom and liberty. And it absolutely is. If you take that away, if you start to define who can speak and what they can say, the next logical step is what they can think. And this is what we see time and time again in these totalitarian governments. First, they change the spoken word. the meanings. They usurp them. And then they put new meanings to things. And if you don't accept those new meanings, then you have to be re-educated or eliminated. Now that sounds very dramatic, because here in America, that's not going to happen. Joe Pangaro, that's not good. No one's going to re-educate or eliminate anyone. But how many times have we heard recently that there are people on the left, people on the right aren't saying it, but people on the left are saying it. You can't re-educate someone. No, they're not saying that. They're saying, yes, you can. We need to have re-education camps. People that voted for Trump need to get their thinking right. And if they don't, they should be punished. These are real thoughts. If we look and see, we can look at an individual rising up and saying that. And you can say, that person is saying that to get attention. That person is saying that to get noticed. That person's a crackpot. But that's how those things start. Somebody starts an idea and people jump on it. What is cancel culture? If not, really, an inflated re-education program. The words have been co-opted. The meanings have been co-opted. And now, if you speak those words, doesn't matter what you mean when you're speaking words, doesn't matter your intent in your brain as you speak them, doesn't matter. It's just the words that you use, if they do not fit the paradigm of what is correct and appropriate, then you are deemed offensive, hateful, and you need to be re-educated or removed or both. And we see this happening right in front of our face every single day. I saw a thing the other day, and you say to yourself, how crazy can it get? Well, PETA, the People for Ethical Treatment of Animals, you have to look at them and say, on its face, they want to treat animals ethically. I do too. I don't want to hurt animals. But animals are here for a purpose. They are here to serve humanity. Right? But that doesn't mean we have to torture them and punish them and use them for all kinds of experiments that we don't have to do. I agree with that. But PETA comes out and they say, we have to stop saying certain words because it promotes speciesism. Speciesism. See how this becomes a runaway train, this kind of thinking that there's right speech and wrong speech and you have to do the right thing. So what they said is, instead of saying, someone is a pig if they're sloppy, you know, don't use that word. Say they're sloppy, right? Because pig, you know, you're hurting the pigs, the animals. That's speciesism. You know, don't say someone's slothful, because that offends the sloths, right? And it makes us think poorly of the sloth. I don't know. I never, ever thought that way. I don't know who does think that way. It is just another example of how we go down this road when we take speech and we use speech as a weapon, because it is, how else do we get along? We communicate. We are communicative animals as human beings. We communicate through verbal and nonverbal language. This is how societies are built. This is how relationships are built. This is how wars are started. And what we see happening is the control of what can be said, the control of speech, is the first domino to fall. And I don't know, I honestly, my friends out there in Chasing Justice Land, I don't know why people don't see it. Why they see it as, okay, it's hateful words, you can't use it, and if you do use it, you should be punished. As opposed to, you know, I mean, like codified law punishment. As opposed to turning the channel because you don't like what somebody said. Or not buying their product because you disagree with them. But to have them have to be destroyed is the weaponization of words. The weaponization of words. You know, and I see we're reaching that pinnacle now. You know, does anybody watch the award shows? Do you watch any of these award shows? Well, there was just an award show for singers and music. And we are in the middle of this cancel culture where they're canceling make-believe cartoon characters because of the behaviors of the cartoon characters send out a terrible message. Yet we listen to some popular music today that is considered the be-all and end-all, and everyone should walk around singing it. And if you listen to it's disgusting. You talk about saying things that could put thoughts in people's heads that are inappropriate, but one is okay, one is perfectly okay, and the other is not. Now, Mark Levin, the great Mark Levin, the great one, you know, Mark Levin is a brilliant individual, and I listen to Mark, I read his books, because I'm trying to understand what he knows. You know, I'm not a follower of anyone, but I learn from lots of people. I've told you how many times I listened to Ron Kuby, because even though he is on the left as far as you can be, he is articulate in his point of view, and he makes a case. Now, he doesn't always win me over with his argument, but sometimes he has, because I'm open-minded to seeing things in a different way. And I've heard Ron Kuby sway me one way or another, because he's an articulate, he doesn't attack me, he doesn't go after me, call me names because I don't listen to what he says. He makes his case. And Mark Levin makes his case. And if you listen to what he says, instead of just saying, oh, he's a hater, so anything he says, I can't listen to him, as opposed to actually listening to what someone is saying. And Mark makes the case that because political correctness is a real living, breathing thing now, and cancel culture is really part of political correctness, obviously it's one and the same, because we're trying to change the dynamic between what's right and what's wrong, what has happened in the past and what should happen in the future, because we're trying to do all of that at one time in one fell swoop by demands, by demanding and power, by controlling people's lives, what we see is that we can hear that certain words are horrific and we should not use them. And we can all agree and say, that sounds like a very painful word. People don't like it. I'm not going to use it because I know words can be painful. Now, you shouldn't put someone in jail for saying words. That's free speech. But I don't have to listen to that person if they use those kind of words. I can dislike that. I cannot spend time in their company, right? I cannot buy their products if they're going to sell products and use words that are horrible. But what we're seeing and what's confounding is that some words are not appropriate for some groups, but okay for other groups. And that flies in the face of logic. That flies in the face of people going, I don't understand. I'm trying to do the right thing. If that word is bad, let's all agree it's bad and not use it. But then it's used culturally in other areas. Getting rid of cartoons because of what the modern meaning is. And this cancel culture of destroying things. Because we don't have a clear set of values and rules for all of us to say, okay, how do we move forward from this mess? Because we are in a mess, my friends. This is a mess. And this is my point. Going forward, there is no simple answer for going forward. We cannot continue at this pace. We have got to come to some kind of consensus between all of us that, okay, let's do the right thing and move forward. Let's save America, because if America goes, the world goes with it. This is Lieutenant Joe. I'll be back in a minute for round two. I hope I gave you something to think about.
Now, never before in our history have we witnessed the level of hatred that is now being waged against our law enforcement. While anarchist groups create havoc and overwhelm our first responders, these same groups and their corporate supporters are calling for the police forces to be shrunk and defunded. What can you and I do to make a difference? How can we stand up for what is right and to show our support? That's what I'm going to tell you about this incredible new platform. It's called ShopToTheRight.com. And it's a new shopping platform that will help you find businesses that align with your values. They feature products made in America. They support veteran-owned businesses, as well as our law enforcement community. This is a time when we need to stick together. We need to shop together, and we need to support each other. It's time for you and I to make some noise and stand up to protect our country. And one easy way to do that is to shop and give our money to companies that don't seek to destroy our way of life. So join the fight for liberty. ShopToTheRight.com. Support those American businesses that support law enforcement and veterans.
Welcome back to round two here on Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro. And I'm kind of in a thoughtful kind of a mood today. You know, this afternoon, spending our time together here every weekday at 3 p.m. is excellent. You know, I'm looking at the seasonal changes and what's going on with all of us. We talked about the pandemic at length recently, but it's not going away. It's changing. I know schools are starting to change, right? What kind of changes are really happening? Restaurants are starting to open where now you're up to 50% capacity in some of these real lockdown places. There are investigations going on about what was done initially with the elderly people being sent in back into the nursing homes where there was thousands and thousands of our elderly, our parents and grandparents who died because they were exposed to this because they were ordered back into nursing homes. You know, there's so much happening. And now down in the beautiful state of Florida, which is really an example of how to conduct business and be open, they've been very successful. You know, they're doing the right thing in Florida. Their economy is working out. People are visiting. People are staying safe and healthy. We now have spring break. And spring break is a time of debauchery. Spring break is a time of revelry. It's a time of celebration, of youth, really, is what it is. You're going out there, you're partying, you're meeting people. And that's, you know, that can be fun. You know, you go meet a lot of different people, you have fun, you have your cocktails, you go to the beach. It's all wonderful. It's kind of letting go off steam. Doing that in a pandemic. Well, I know the kids are down there. I see all these kids down there in spring break. And I saw that they just had a huge problem in one of the beach communities down there in Florida because they were, they had a bunch of kids who attacked police officers. They attacked the police officers who were trying to, they have a midnight curfew, 12 o'clock curfew. You got to be off the streets and whatever it is because of the pandemic. So we still have some time kind of curfews in, even in a place like Florida, apparently. And what happened was these officers were trying to clear the streets and they had to make some arrests. And while they did that, some of these revelers attacked the police. This is another clear example of where we're headed. Because when you can see the police as your enemy, when you can see the police as a group that you do not have to necessarily listen to or obey, and people hate that word, obey, who am I to obey you? I'm a free person. And we can go through this game of understanding what goes on. The reason we have police officers, right? They are not a rogue band of individuals who got together and just decided they're going to run around with guns and fancy cars and uniforms and tell everyone what to do. The police are us. They are our society. Our society recognized some realities about human interaction. If we just allow it to be like the Wild West, every man and woman for themselves, you will have chaos and you will have violence. And eventually you'll have a strong leader, whether it be a community leader or a regional leader or a national leader, will rise up and control everything with an iron hand. And that's how, historically, look back at all of human history. What have you had? You've had kings and czars and emperors and these people who managed to gain power and control and then control the population with the fear of punishment, prison, or death, right? This is kind of what happens. So when we see our police here in America as oppressors and not a representative of us, we wanted to have a nice society. We recognized that if we just let people run wild, we will not have a nice life. You will not be able to raise a family and have things and have a stable ability to express your rights and to live your rights, because you'll always be battling someone who wants to take your stuff, take somebody in your family, do something to you, and ruin your ability to express your rights and live your life as you choose. So we decided that, hey, the best way to do that is to have some laws, agreements. Now, people call them laws. I call them agreements. You know, how are we going to do this? If we had to start from scratch, this is where you get a good understanding of the police. If we had to start from scratch all over again, You know, where everybody's just running wild, and what are we going to do? How are we going to do? Well, we can't just have everybody raising their hand and screaming and hollering at a meeting, because you never get nothing done. So we choose to elect representatives. And now those representatives come out and say, we are going to do A, B, C, and D. And another one says, I'm going to do D, E, and F. And whatever the majority agrees with, that's who you vote for. Now you have a representative. Now on a smaller scale, that representative gets together and says, what's our big problem here? Everyone's running wild and it's dangerous. Well, do we want that? No, we don't. We want to live safely. We don't want people to just kill other people. We don't want people to rape people. We don't want people to steal people's things. So therefore, we have to set up a system where if you do those things, you hurt society, you hurt the individual, then there has to be a penalty. We as a group have to stop people from doing those bad things, because the rest of us don't want to live like that. So there we codify laws, really agreements is what they are. We all agree that this is the right thing to do. Then how do we enforce that law? We tell everybody, we post it on a wall, right? They just post it on a wall. This is the law, you better do it. And then you know what people do? They look at it like it's a piece of paper. It's just a piece of paper. I don't have to do it. There's no penalty for me not doing it. I'm going to do what I want. I'll rob, rape, murder, whatever I feel like doing. I'll take everybody's stuff. So we said, okay, next thing we have to do is how do we enforce these laws? Let's get a group of individuals that we train and we empower them to enforce the law that we, the people, have agreed to. That's why I call them agreements. We've agreed to this. You should not murder someone wantonly. You shouldn't steal somebody's stuff. You shouldn't rape them. You shouldn't go and take their things. You shouldn't break into their house. All these things we've agreed to. Now, without an enforcement tool on that, humanity would run wild. That's just the way we are. Historically, look at us, right? Even here in America, we have crime, right? People are out of control. So we have to have a group of people to enforce the law. That's our law enforcement community. Get it? Law enforcement, enforce the law. That's how it kind of goes together, right? Connect the dots. And we empower these men and women to go out and enforce the law to make sure people don't rob, rape, break into our house and steal our stuff. And then there's penalties for those people who do it. The whole idea is let's all just live nice together and everyone do their own thing and leave everybody alone and earn what you get and everything will be cool. That's really the bottom line. And then there's people who don't do that. Now, for many years, in civilized societies, there was an understanding that that was the purpose of law enforcement. Right, that law enforcement was your friend if you were a law-abiding citizen. If you were someone who had chaotic ideas, if you were someone who had criminal intentions, then no, the police were not your friend. They're going to come and get you, and they're going to hold you to account. And people don't like that. So we see our society today where, for lots of different reasons, perceptual and, in instances, real reasons, people have turned against the police because the police represent that control. And people don't want to be controlled. You know, in a land where we have freedom, it kind of seems like we should have perfect freedom, do whatever we want. And we can't do that because if we do, it'll fall apart. If you're on an island by yourself running your own island, everybody just does what they want, that's fine. If that's what you want. But in a country with different opinions, different ideas about what's okay to do, we have to have a standard set of agreements. So we've turned now against our police because police are oppressors. Police are killers of people for no reason other than they choose to want to kill people. This is the impressions that people have now. Have there been real instances where police officers have done things wrong? I look at it this way. If it's a problem of the heart or a problem of the head, right? So a problem of the head means you've thought it out and you've chosen to do something wrong. You've chosen to break a law, hurt somebody else, steal their stuff, rape them, kill them for your own gain. That's a problem of the head. A problem of the heart is when you intended to do something that wasn't criminal or bad or evil or to hurt someone and it goes sideways. So let's not look at DWI, drunken driving, because you're out there, you're putting people in danger by drinking and driving. That's just the truth. You're not in control of your vehicle. And if you hurt someone, the excuse is, I didn't mean to hurt anyone, but you did. And that's why we have DWI laws, right? Just a genuine motor vehicle accident right? Where there's no criminal intent, right? That's not something that we look at and say, oh, that's a problem of the head, unless you're speeding. That's why there's a speeding law, another agreement. We're not going to speed. We're going to drive at safe speeds so that everyone stays safe, right? So we look at this and we say, our society has now said the police are bad because some police have done things of the head. They've purposely done the wrong thing. We all know that that's a reality. The other reality that we all know is that that is such a small number of incidents that it's almost inconsequential. Now, I will say, if it happens to you, if there's a bad officer out there that targets you for whatever reason and does something to you, whether it be write you a ticket because they're just annoyed, they're malicious with you, they don't like you, they have power, that happens. We have to admit that it does. So rarely that 99.9% of us will never come across someone like that because that's not who the cops are. What about the officer that purposely goes out and does something bad where someone gets hurt? I think that's even a smaller percentage because I know cops. I've been one for 30 years. They don't sit around in the morning and say, okay, who are we going to go get today because we don't like them? Let's all get together and go get these guys, right? That doesn't happen. The other side of what you have is problems of the heart. When an officer is doing something that they believe is their duty and it starts to go sideways, because of the nature of law enforcement, you're dealing with life and death topics at times. Someone commits a robbery, a murder, a rape, an arson, and they're trying to get away with doing their evil. And the officer tries to make an arrest. Guess what? Lots of people who've done bad things do not want to be held accountable. How many times have I said this? And what do? Do they submit to the arrest and say, well, I'll deal with it in court? Or do they fight with the officer and the officer fights back? And sometime in the heat of that battle, it can go wrong. It can go too far and a person ends up injured or dead. The officer did not intend to murder anyone. They were doing what they believed they had to do to stop the violence, what the law has empowered them to do. Police officers are not out there to lose confrontations. We don't put them out there and say, well, officer, you know, if it looks like the guy's starting to fight with you, it looks like you're going to fight back with him and you're going to win, you probably shouldn't. You should let him go. We don't say that. What we do tell our officers is you only use the amount of force necessary to affect a legal, justifiable end. So if that means placing someone under arrest, you use the force necessary. So we start out with verbal. Put your hands behind your back, you're under arrest. If the person does that, they get handcuffed and put in the car. And that's that. No matter who the cop is, no matter who the person they're arresting is, doesn't matter. Race, creed, color, religion, doesn't matter. You're under arrest, put your hands behind your back. You get arrested, you go to court. You explain you don't like what happened, you thought it was unfair, wasn't you, whatever, you didn't do it, whatever. Number two, it goes from verbal, now it goes to the use of things. If I say to someone, put your hands behind your back, and they resist, they pull away, I'm allowed to grab them. Because I've been empowered by society to enforce the law, not by Joe, who's just deciding to do this. The law says, if you break the law, you have to be held to account, and I have to take you into custody. So if you pull away, I get to grab you. If you swing at me, guess what? I don't have to take a punch in the face. I can duck and swing back, right? If you pull a knife out, I can use a gun. I don't have to get stabbed. Police officers are us. We send them out into the streets to do their job, right? And we're losing track of that because when an officer purposely does something bad, they should be held accountable. I think we can all agree to that. That is a very, very small number of incidents that happen in the millions and millions of incidents that police interact with the communities around us, every community. In the instances where it goes bad of the heart because the officer was trying to do the right thing, this is where it is extremely unfortunate. And I even hate to use that word, unfortunate. So let's say in the case of a police officer and a group of officers executing a warrant on a dangerous person who's selling drugs or selling weapons or something serious, right? Some serious crime they're involved in. And the officers have reason to believe that that person will resist and may have weaponry. Officers, remember, let's remember the rule. Cops don't have to get shot and killed to do their job. Right? So they go to the location, they go in to get the person, and now the person produces a weapon. And the officers fire at that person. They shoot at that person to protect themselves, which is legally justified. And if they hit the person with the weapon, that is unfortunate for the person, but they shouldn't have had a weapon, and that's how that goes. What if they hit someone else in the room who didn't have a weapon? Did the officers intend to murder that person? I don't think they did. That is a horrible and terrible outcome of an incident. And that's a problem of it going wrong in the head. You know, the officer was there to do the right thing. A person pulled a weapon, you fired, you missed, and you hit someone else in the room. That innocent person, innocent at that moment, that they weren't creating any danger to the officers, is a terrible and horrible tragedy. It is not a crime. It is not a crime. Now, of course, you can look at it. Lots of laws in different locations will quantify the officers, what they're allowed to do. You know, if there was anybody else around, they shouldn't have used deadly force, you know, unless it was the absolute last thing they were being fired on. You know, we can parse it into a million things. But the reality is, if the officers just went in and said, we're going in to get Bob Jones, and Bob Jones has a weapon, we're going to kill him and kill everyone else in the house. That is homicidal maniacs. And they would be committing murder. But if an officer goes in to make an arrest and the subject pulls a weapon and the officer fires and hits someone else in the house who was not the subject of the arrest, that is a horrible and terrible tragedy. And if that happened in my house, I would be angry, I'd be pained, I'd be hurting, I would be miserable, I would be frustrated, I would be all those things. But this is where, as society, we have to look at that and say, who brought that action on? Were the police just going to Bob Jones's house because they don't like Bob Jones, going to kick in and murder him? Or were they going there to serve a legitimate societal function, arresting Bob Jones, and Bob Jones grabbed a weapon? The officers fired back, and there was a tragic result that an innocent person was struck in that exchange of gunfire. It's hard for us to quantify that into a thought. How does that ever become okay? It's not okay. That is a terrible, horrible thing. But who caused that to happen? The police or Bob Jones? So you could back up and say the police shouldn't have went there in the first place. They shouldn't be arresting him for that kind of a thing. Well, then, as a society, we have to decide what laws we want enforced and what we don't. But when we have laws that we want enforced and the officers do it and it goes wrong by the heart, that is not homicide. I mean, that's not a murder. It is a homicide. A human being died. But it is not something that the officer did purposely to hurt someone. Our cops don't do that. Is there a lot for us to learn from each other? Is there a lot more understanding we can have between all of our communities, our law enforcement community, and the communities we protect and serve? Yes, there is. But that's the coming together that I'm talking about, to prevent tragedies like that. And when we find an officer who does something of the head, they have to be held accountable, just like anyone else, because we as society have laws that say that. We don't allow people we've empowered to enforce the law to commit crimes. Our problem as a society right now is we're having a hard time determining what is a crime, what's a problem of the head, and what's a problem of the heart. So we all need to think about this. This is Lieutenant Joe for Chasing Justice. We'll be back in a minute.
AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Fighting every day against the cancel culture that wants to silence and erase us. 5 years on the air, and we will not be silenced. America Out Loud Talk Radio. It's a fight for the soul of humanity.
All right, everybody, welcome back to Chasing Justice. I'm your host, Lieutenant Joe Pangaro, and we are on the America Out Loud Radio Network. You know, this network is amazing, is that it is a powerful beacon of free speech. And I like everyone to listen, not only to me here at 3 o'clock, but listen to all the other programs that are on here. Pop in anytime. Get the app for your phone. Go to the podcasts. Listen to the podcasts. They're all out there. It's a great place to exchange ideas and thoughts and get us thinking. You know, through segment one and segment two, you know, I make my notes here, and there's things I want to talk about and things I feel that are going on, and I want to convey certain messages. And I hope that my message coming across here is one of trying to have understanding, right? We all have to understand each other. And understanding doesn't mean understanding and liking. It means understanding for understanding's sake. You know, I see people doing things. They're out in the street and they're frustrated and they're angry and they're showing their frustration and anger for whatever reason. And they end up destroying property in their frustration and their anger. I can understand their feeling. I can understand their motivation, the genuine motivations of frustration and anger and pain and hurt. I absolutely can understand it. And I say, if we can find a way to alleviate that, that it doesn't have to get to the point of people acting out like that, no matter who it is, no matter what group, because today it's this group, tomorrow it's that group, next week it's another group, right? That's not an appropriate way for us to have to respond, but the reality is, we shouldn't have to get to that point of frustration and anger in the first place. And that's what I'm trying to say. We need to think. Doesn't mean you have to like what the other group is doing, but you need to think about it, be open to it, and not just look at your own concerns. What are the other concerns? So my whole conversation about law enforcement, and I try to be clear. Yes, there are people that do things wrong. Every profession has someone who does something wrong. But it is such a small number of police officers that do the wrong thing on purpose. You know, and with the amount of things officers have to do, think about in your life, how many times somebody comes at you with a gun do you have to make a decision like that to shoot or not shoot? How many times do you put yourself in a position where you have to run down a dark alley after somebody with a knife and then they turn on you and you have to decide, gee, do they still have the knife? Did they drop the knife? Should I shoot them in the knee? Should I try and scare them? How many times do you do that in your life? Probably not many. Our police officers do that every single day, all across this country. You know, watch the news. Take a look. You know, don't just look at the sites that you like. Go look at other sites where they show you a video of officers going to bring a woman home from a domestic in New York, right? A couple of officers take this woman back to her home, a scene of domestic violence where she has been abused by her husband or boyfriend. They live together. And the officers go in the house so that the woman can gather up her belongings. Seems pretty simple. She's feeling afraid to be by herself with this abuser, so the police go with her. All right, so the police go in the house. They're saying, hey, is the man around? He's not here. Okay, why don't you get your stuff together? She starts to gather stuff. And guess what? The guy shows up, the husband or the boyfriend, I don't know which he was. He shows up, walks in the front door. And what does he do? Does he say, officers, what's going on here? No, he walks in the front door shooting a gun at the officers and the woman. And they return fire. How often does that happen to you? You go to your friend's house and they start shooting at you, right? Were the cops doing evil? Or were they trying to protect that woman and help her get her belongings? Because you know what? Domestic violence is real. It's a real problem for people. So the officers are doing the right thing, and here somebody just opens fire on them for no reason, right? No legitimate reason. Now they fire back and hit that person and kill them. And there's going to be some people that say, well, you didn't have to do that. You could have ran out the back door. Well, that's not the police's job to run out the back door, right? To give up territory. The police are us. They maintain their position. They control the situation. That's why we pay them. That's why we train them. That's why we put them out there. But these kind of instances happen over and over and over and over again. There was one the other day. Officers were called to one of the big box stores because somebody was shoplifting. Now you could say to yourself, shoplifting? Boy, if anybody gets hurt in that transaction, the cops are completely wrong. Well, the cops went in to get this shoplifter who stole, I don't know what they stole. They could have sold underwear and laundry detergent. Well, when the officer walks into the room where they are, this person has a gun concealed, jumps up and starts shooting at the cops. Now, would you expect someone who did shoplifting, a simple little thing like shoplifting, to be a danger? No, you would say it's a shoplifter, but that shoplifter ends up dead because the two officers fire back and kill him. And suddenly it's, oh, the person was just a shoplifter. No, there's more to the story is what I'm trying to say. We have to understand. If we have to understand and identify when something goes wrong on purpose, when a cop does something bad on purpose, then we have to also understand that people do things bad also on purpose. Right? I'm thinking of an instance back in the day. We had a case. We had these motels on our highway, and they were not your Sheraton type of places. You know, they were you could rent the room for an hour, 3 hours a day, or a couple of weeks. A lot of transient people staying there, people who were down on their luck, they were staying there. And this young man and his girlfriend were living there. The young man was probably 25 years old, out of work, and right nearby was a mall. And he would go to the mall, to shop. There was places he could go and get things. Well, he was going into one of the box stores in there, and he was shoplifting. Right? See, I'm connecting these two stories. He was shoplifting. So the security personnel saw him on the cameras. They saw he walked in with nothing in his hand. Then they watched him pull a plastic bag out of his pocket. Now, it was a store plastic bag from that store that he had obviously legitimately purchased something in the past. But now he has a bag, and he goes around, and he's shoplifting clothes. Right? Now, they were clothes he probably needed. His girlfriend probably needed underwear, socks, whatever, that he didn't have the money for. And he was shoplifting them. And then he put them in the bag, and he walked right out the front door, and nobody thought anything of it because he had a bag from that store. Now, the security saw him steal it, and they couldn't get down to him quick enough to stop him. Well, over the course of a couple weeks, he had committed two or three of these incidences where he went in and stole things. And security was aware of him. They took a picture of him off the security camera. And they put it in the security office, and they did briefings when people were coming to work. Hey, if you see this guy, let us know, because he may be shoplifting today. Each time they made a police report so the officers knew about, you know, the presence of this guy. We didn't know who he was or where he lived, but we knew that this guy was out there. Well, on this particular day, this person shows up, and the security personnel see him right away. And now they start monitoring him. Matter of fact, they have extra personnel on duty, so they send a couple of security guards, plainclothes, down into the store on the floor so they can keep track of him. If he steals, they can stop him this time. Because guess what? It's illegal to steal things even if you need them. Even if you feel you want them, you want new pants, you want the coolest thing, or you need underwear, you're not allowed to steal it. Right? The store doesn't have to put up with that. That's why they take people into custody and you get charged, right? So they send the security guards out there. And they watch this young man again. He pulls a bag out of his pocket. He goes around and he steals some underwear, literally, and some laundry detergent. And he turns and he starts walking to go to leave. Now, the store, when you went past the cash registers, in most jurisdictions, if you walk past the cash registers where you're supposed to pay for your items, and you start to head outside, at that point, it's a per se violation that you didn't stop and pay. You're stealing them. That's your intent. You're leaving the store without paying. Shoplifting, right? Simple thing. Well, the security guard sees him, spots him as he's going towards the door, watches him in case he goes to the register. He didn't go to the register. He went past the register, and he started to walk out the main doors. Well, when you go out the main doors, then there's this gigantic vestibule, glass in vestibule, right, where people can wait for the bus or for their rides without it being in the weather. And a security guard gets to that point and says, hey, stop, security. Now, the guy turns around and looks at him. And he says, what do you want? He goes, dude, you didn't pay for that stuff. Don't move. We're calling the police. Well, the guy drops the bag and he turns to leave. So the security guard wants to take him into custody. This is the third, fourth, or fifth incidents of shoplifting. And he's going to take him into custody. So he goes over to grab the guy. The guy turns and now they start fighting in the vestibule. They're fighting. They're wrestling all around. And at some point, the criminal guy ends up on a bench. He jumps up on a bench that's in his vestibule. And the security guard has him around the waist. And he's holding onto him. And the plate glass breaks. The plate glass, you know, the big windows, big giant windows, breaks. And shards of this glass, razor sharp shards of glass, start falling out of the window. Well, up till now, you had a shoplifting, right, of what, $20 worth of underwear and liquid detergent? And you would say to yourself, that's nothing. Why are people involved with that? Why would somebody do, you know, that's nothing. Well, now that they're fighting in the state of New Jersey, when you fight with security after committing a shoplifting, it becomes a robbery. Now it's a serious crime, right? So now he's wrestling around with the guard. The glass is breaking. This young man reaches over to the broken window and grabs a shard of glass that's about 5 inches wide and about 12 or 13 inches long, like a dagger. Razor sharp. Now you got to picture this. The bad guy's standing up on a bench. The security guard is on the ground, so he's lower than him. He's got him around the waist trying to hold on to him because someone's calling the police. The guy gets this shard of glass out of the window and he starts stabbing at the security guard at his back, so much so it slices the guy's jacket open. When the security guard sees that, he doesn't want to die over this, so he lets the guy go. He backs up. Hey, man, what are you doing? Guy drops the glass, runs out of the store. His hands are all bloody from the glass, and he disappears. So patrol officers get there. They describe what's going on. They put it out to the rest of the officers that are arriving. And when they put out the description of the suspect, one of the patrol officers, Johnny on the spot, really smart, says, hey, I talked to a guy that fits that description, lives in the motel, probably a quarter of a mile away from this store. So officers go over there and they knock on the door, you know, and they a young lady answers the door and is, you know, we're looking for a young man fits this description. She goes, oh, that sounds like my boyfriend, Tom, but he's not here right now. And like, oh, when's he coming back? I don't know. He went looking for work, you know, through two or three towns over. So the cops weren't really sure. You know, it was just information. They're just following up on it. And they leave. But one of the officers stayed in the area. And he's just monitoring the parking lot, watching what's going on from out of the way so that he could see without being seen. Well, 10 minutes after all the officers leave, the door opens up and out comes the guy that fits the description, who the girl just said wasn't in that room. Right? The cops had no reason to search it. She said he wasn't there, and they didn't even know if he was the suspect. He fit that description, so let's go check on him. Now the officer sees a guy come out that fits that description. He gets in a car, and he takes off before the officer could pull out of his position and get around to where the guy was. So the guy gets away. So they decide, we're going to set up surveillance on this place. About an hour later, the car comes back with the same guy, and he goes in the room. The officer calls, hey, that guy's back in the room. So what do? We go up there, a bunch of detectives. We knock on the door. We had identified the guy through the hotel office, and we found out he had a $100 parking warrant. He was wanted from another town for parking violations. He never paid his tickets, and there's a warrant for the guy. So if we find him, we can arrest him on the warrant, and then if we have reason to talk to him about the robbery, we will. So we knock on the door. The girl answers the door and say, listen, you know, is Bobby Jones here? He says, no, he's not here. And looking down, I see work boots that have blood all over them, and I see a shirt that's got blood all over it. Now, remember, our suspect cut his hands up pretty bad when he had the glass. So I said, well, listen, we have a warrant for his arrest. Is he in the room? Because if he is and you're lying, you're going to get in trouble, and we don't want you to get in trouble. She goes, no, you can come in. You can search. So we go in. We look all around. It's a small, you know, little motel room. So it's the main room with the bedroom, the little kitchenette, and a bathroom. We don't find him there. One of the patrolmen sees drops of blood going underneath the pedestal of the bed. So, of course, we lift up the pedestal of the bed, and there's this guy under there. His hands are cut up. He's all bloody. We take him into custody on the warrant, and we get him to headquarters. Now, once we get him there, we start talking to him, and long and short of it, he admits that, you know, they're down out of luck. They don't have any money, and they needed underwear, and they needed laundry detergent. So he went over there a couple times, 3-4 times, and he stole stuff. He says, what am I supposed to do? I have no money. So, obviously, well, why don't you get a job? Well, I can't find any kind of work. I'm looking, whatever his excuses were. But he admits to doing all of this. And when I ask him, why did you try and cut the security guard? He says, because I didn't want to go to jail. And I wanted to get out of there. And that guy was preventing me from getting out of there. So I saw an opportunity and I took it. I said, you could have cut that guy's head off. He goes, yeah, I didn't intend to. I just wanted to, you know, scare him really bad. I said, well, you sliced his jacket open. Yeah, well, I was pretty upset. You know, I want to get out of there. He admits all this. He writes a statement. He gives us a statement. Long and short of it, he gets charged with armed robbery because once he grabbed the glass and tried to kill the security guard, it becomes armed robbery over $25 worth of underwear and laundry detergent. But the lesson here is that when we hear something and we hear that it went bad and the police reacted a certain way and we say, why would they do that over shoplifting? Well, if a guy will do this, almost cut another man's head off with a big hunk of glass because he doesn't want to get arrested, What do you think people will do when they've done something really bad and they don't want to get arrested? Right? You don't think they'll fight with the officers? You don't think they'll shoot at the officers? You don't think they'll pull knives on the officers and hammers and clubs and everything else? Or if they're physically bigger than the officers, they won't fist fight with them and try and beat them to death? It is sad state of our society that this is a reality that we deal with. And I tell you this story just so you understand something so simple as a shoplifting can turn into such a serious crime. If he had hit that guy in the neck, that security guard, that guy would have bled out and died over underwear and laundry detergent. Why didn't the guy just get taken into custody? Because he didn't want to go to jail. And today, our society, see, I'm going to loop on back here. I'm looping on back like our Ms. Bizarkey says all the time in the Biden White House. I'm looping on back. In our society today, we have said that the cops are bad. You don't have to listen to them. They're all killers. And you should actively resist from them. You have every right to resist if you disagree. Well, we've emboldened people, all kinds of people, right? It's not just one group. It's tons and tons of people now are emboldened that the cops are bad and I can fight back if I want to. This has put our officers in great danger. There's been ambushes and murders of our officers that we've never seen before. We are seeing resisting incidents. We are seeing fights. We are seeing terrible, terrible things between our police and our society because of a few bad apples that have done some bad things that should be held accountable. We have now said the cops are bad and you have every right to fight them. And all you're doing is endangering everyone with that. So that's really my message today here on Chasing Justice. What is justice? What do we want to do? Why are we doing this? Our society is going down a very, very strange rat hole with this whole get rid of capitalism, get rid of law enforcement, you know, everybody be anarchy, everybody be communist, everybody be socialist. We're going down a strange place. And remember, if we lose America, warts and all, we lose our freedom. This is a unique place. Do we have problems? Yes. Do we need to address them? Yes. Do we need to hear each other? Yes. Do we need to fix some things? Yes, we do. But the way we're going about it is not the right way. It's not going to work in the long term. We're all going to suffer. So think about that. Let's thank our law enforcement out there, right? They're doing the right thing, the great majority of them, every single day. And I salute them, right? Listen to each other, my friends. Be a part of the solution, not a part of the problem. This is Lieutenant Joe for Chasing Justice, and we will see you again down the road.